Thank you. I'd like to first thank the National Sclerotinia Initiative for funding this research in the Colorado State University Experiment Station. My colleagues on this work are Glenn Brown, a assistant that works in my lab, Mark Newell, who was a grad student that did most of the work that I'm going to show you today. Some of the end stuff is validation of it. And Patrick Byrne, molecular lab at Howard Schwartz, plant pathologist. So genetic resistance to white mold and common and scarlet runner bean is sought after because white mold is a serious pathogen, particularly in areas where there's high humidity and/or wet soil surfaces. It's a plant pathogenic fungus that's known by different names depending upon what part of the plant attacks in sunflower, and attacks over 408 species. So it's quite ubiquitous in the world. Yield losses are typically can range from between 20 and 75%, and are usually highest in the areas that have high humidity because of the life cycle of the fungus. White mold can be controlled by typical crop rotation out of a susceptible host, usually going from a dicot to a monocot for more than 3 years. It does cross inoculate between sunflowers and dry beans and other crops, so rotation with non-legume, I should say non-dicots, doesn't always work. Fungicides have been used fairly unsuccessfully. The problem is getting them incorporated into the canopy where they can actually attack the fungus. Irrigation management is used in where I come from, Colorado, primarily in late season, by limiting irrigation water to reduce the humidity in the canopy. And finally, genetic factors like architecture, upright architecture that provides a more porous canopy, and physiological resistance that actually reduces the infection of the pathogen physiologically on the plant. And it's this last part that I'm going to spend most time on, and we're going to talk about physiological resistance. It's found in both common bean and scarlet runner bean, vulgaris and coccineas. Higher levels have typically been found in coccineas than vulgaris. Vulgaris is usually modest resistance. Previous studies have shown that resistance can be introgressed from coccineas, scarlet runner bean, into common bean with difficulty. And I'll show you some data to show you the difficulty in getting good segregation in the offspring. In coccineas, both major genes and QTL have been identified. Back in 1973, in the 70s, Georgia Bowie at Cornell reported single gene resistance in hybrids between vulgaris and coccineas. More recently, Dr. Schwartz and Singh at Idaho, Schwartz at Colorado and Singh at Idaho, have shown that there are levels of dominant resistance, but they're not complete, they're incomplete. And Oregon State group of Chips, Gilmore, and Myers have shown more of a quantitative form of resistance from coccineas. A vulgaris, pretty much everything is QTL. Minor effects, difficult to breed for, primarily because the phenotyping of the individual is difficult, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. So our primary goal then was to take known QTL from vulgaris and introgress some of the more major genes from coccineas into an inbred backcross population. It's a backcross population because the first generation is completely female sterile, although it has viable pollen and seems to pollinate that recurrent vulgaris parent quite well, and you can get some semblance of a population to work with. And then we wanted to validate the previous QTLs that have been reported in the literature by us, our group, and others. So we decided to work carefully and select the right parents. We chose a common bean parent that was resistant to white mold, at least moderately. There's, again, fairly poor resistance in common. there are known molecular markers that had been shown to be QTLs and mapped on a map. And we wanted to make sure, obviously, that these two could hybridize, the two species. Not all vulgaris nor all coccineous accessions will hybridize, so you have to have a little bit of luck there and some planning. So we chose a common immune parent that we had worked with called WM67. It had significantly lower white mold scores, these are resistance scores, disease severity scores, if you will, than a parent. G122 is known in the literature to have several major QTLs, one in the 40% category, as one of the parents, and it showed good disease infection in the field too. So it also had been mapped in one of our studies with a former student of mine, Maxwell, that it possessed 5 QTL for resistance that were significant. The Scarlet Runner choice we chose was a PI, worked with at Oregon State by Gilmore and Myers and others. It had high resistance to white mold, higher than even some of the previously reported ones. And they did a population where they crossed it to a snap bean, and they reported 6 QTL that were contributed by this parent to resistance. So we thought that was a good choice, too. So we have 2 parents, both with known QTL, both one with a good map and one without. So we hybridized these plants, and we were able to produce 8 F1 hybrids. 3 of the 8 hybrids were then used as the male parent to backcross to WM67. The remaining 5 hybrids were either sterile or didn't like to produce flowers or had other issues. We produced 140 BC1F1, and that number is only important because we ended up with 65 inbred lines because lots of sterility and crippling in that backcross. So we finally got 65 lines of the BC1F5 that we actually tested for these QTL and white mold. We used some molecular markers, primarily because these were the ones that had been previously reported, and we wanted to validate those markers in the inbred backcross population. The straw test inoculation is not very robust. It's quite imprecise. And not well repeatable. If you do it in January, you might get different results in May because of the temperature of the greenhouse. And in Colorado, it gets pretty chilly in the winter, so it's hard to keep greenhouse temps up in the winter. So basically what you do is you cut the plant right below the third node. You grow the mycelium of the fungus on a petri plate, and you take a soda straw and you close one in, poke the soda straw into the mycelium, and then you slip it over that severed stem. And then you place them in a mist chamber for 21 days. After 21 days, you rate them on a score of 1 to 9. This is a national or international score. We call it a Petzl to Dixon straw test rating. Basically, a score of 3, and I know you can't see that, but the mycelium proceeds through the first node and down into the second node. A 5 goes through the first node and not down to the second. 7, I'm sorry, I misspoke. A 3 is a resistant core, goes not down to the first node, but it does proceed down the stem. A 5 goes through the first node, a 7 goes through to the second node, and a 9 is basically plant death. Okay, so just to give you an overview of what we found. We found a lot of sterility and cripples in this inbred backcross population, much as we expected. We were happy to get 65 lines out of it. There was severe segregation distortion. I'm going to show you a table about how severe it was. For most of the markers we looked at, of the 65 lines, 1 or 2 of them had the coccineous allele. So severe segregation distortion towards the vulgaris parent, towards the backcross parent. We had near normal distributions of IBL for reaction, so the reactions were good, and we looked at some previous QTL, and I'm going to show you some of that data here. I already, did I go to the right way there? There we go. I already mentioned that a lot of these were crippled or sterile. We ended up with 65 inbred back cross lines. We looked at 30 markers based upon those that had been previously reported. Most had been mapped, not all. And 49 of the 65 IBL did not possess any scarlet runner alleles at all. They were of among the 60 markers, they only had vulgaris alleles. So they weren't very informative in that regard. And it also points out the poor transmission of coccineous chromosome segments to the inbred dot cross population. But 16 of them did, and they possessed between 6.7 and 4.6% scarlet runner alleles. As I said, they had severe segregation distortion. Tables should be precise and not have a lot of numbers, so you want to close your eyes, you can here. These are the markers. And all I can show you is this is a segregation distortion. For example, 63 had vulgaris allele and one had coccineus. And you can go down the list and say it's pretty clear that most of what we saw were very few coccineus alleles in the population. Here's the p-value for that chi-square, all highly, highly significant. As I said, distribution was near normal. We got, here's the coccineus parent started out at 3.1. We did recover some inbred lines that were in the low three range. And here's the vulgaris parent. It started out at 5.6, and we found some that were more susceptible. So just a quick review. These are the best inbred back cross lines we found among the 65. The PI line, as an ASI of 3.1, we did not take that. That comes out of the literature because you can't produce seed of coccineus. It has to be vegetatively propagated, and we didn't rerun it to do that. So of these lines, here's six examples of the inbred. And these are the best. So we're approaching the coccineus severity index of 3.1. Four of them. Actually, these are not significantly different amongst themselves. And you can see that the percentage of coccineus alleles varies from 20 to 23 all the way up to in the low, high 40s. Overall, we of the previous 30 QTLs that we looked for, we only found four that we could validate in this population. Three were from a report by Maxwell, and one was from coccineus. This is that table. This is the previous data over here with R-squareds, with Maxwell's markers varying from R-squareds of 14 to 8, and this one from Gilmore and coccineus. We were able to validate those four as have a significant effect. Our R-squared values were quite different, but we did validate that they did occur there. So we did find 30 polymorphic markers. Due to sterility and chromosome homology, few recombinants occurred. So basically, we did find high levels of resistance, and we did validate these markers. So the next step we wanted to do is cross these back into a population where they might have some commercial value to a breeder. So we took our two best inbred back cross lines and crossed them to a fairly commercial pinto line. We screened 200 from each of those populations. This is very preliminary information, so I'm just going to give you kind of the overview. We screened both of those rills with 24 of the previously reported markers, and we only found three that we could validate. So it was a huge disappointment that once we backcrossed to another vulgaris, we pretty much lost most of the previous one. We found three. Here's the markers, listed the markers, just to show you what they are. In one population, DMD15 and BM187 were found. This one was found in vulgaris, and this one was found in coccineus. So we now at least have recovered the coccineus in this back cross population. In the other one, we got another one that was found in coccineus, but we have a different band size, so we know it's not a coccineus. So we were able to pyramid the markers, but we found a whole lot fewer polymorphisms than we expected. Thank you.